I do my show on the Heritage Radio Network because I think it's important to talk about the impact of technology on our lives.
I do my show to reach home cooks and help them do better.
Because I love getting together with people in the industry.
I like hosting my show because, to me, it's the stories about people and their relationship to food that help make the food more interesting and more delicious.
Our hosts do their shows as a labor of love, but we still need your financial support in order to keep the lights on and keep the tape rolling. Please become a member today at heritageradionetwork.org.
The Front Burner with Jimmy and Andrew is proudly sponsored by Restaurant Owner App. Restaurant Owner App is a free app designed by a restaurateur for restaurateurs. Visit restaurantownerapp.com for more.
I'm Mike Kalameko from Food Talk. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to The Front Burner with Jimmy and Andrew, where we serve a weekly menu of industry commentary based on what the market has to offer. I'm Andrew Friedman from Tokeland.com.
I'm Jimmy Bradley from The Red Cat.
The Front Burner with Jimmy and Andrew is produced by Heritage Radio Network, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station devoted to all things food. Help keep HRN alive by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate. And Jimmy, this is our last show of the summer season.
Check it out.
And I would say if you guys have enjoyed listening to us for the last three and a half months, it'd be great if you could hop on the website and make a donation. It really means a lot to the station, and we'd really appreciate it. This fall, after a brief hiatus, Union Square Cafe, which is, of course, Danny Meyer's landmark New York City restaurant, which lived on 16th Street for three decades, will relaunch in a new home on East 19th Street. Here to discuss the relocation and all that it entails is Union Square's executive chef of the past decade, Carmen Quagliata. Carmen, thank you for being here today.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So this is a big deal. The Union Square Cafe is, of course, it's a legendary restaurant. It's one of the restaurants that I think people who follow kind of the history of whatever you want to call it, new American cuisine, or basically the transitional restaurants that took us from kind of the French-dominated past to the sort of anything goes present. Union Square Cafe was one of the sort of markers in that history.
Yeah, yes, it was.
And it was in its home for about 30 years, and it's moving, which is a huge deal.
Yeah, and it's been a huge deal for almost 2.5 years. We've been looking and found a home, and now, you know, last December, as you know, we closed, and
right,
we finally started building, and here we go soon.
So before, and we want to talk a little bit about your own personal history that before you came to Union Square Cafe, but you just mentioned that. Can you just speak for a minute? You know, there've been a lot of high profile closings over the last couple of years. There's the supposed relocation of the Four Seasons coming up, although I guess that's a bit up in the air now. There's some news this week about the name being somewhat in jeopardy. But what was that decision? You know, 30 years by any standard is an amazing run. Can you just talk a little about that decision to actually move it and not kind of say, you know what, that was awesome. We had a great time. Let's all move on to the next thing. Like, what was that decision process like, and over how long a period of time did that take place?
Well, that's a great question. I think that it was an easy decision to keep going. Our last 3 years in the space were three of our best financial years, and I think the ambition to keep going and mentoring and creating and really giving our guests what they love, which is to come in and how we make them feel with our food and hospitality, that was still so relevant and alive and felt great. There was no reason, just because there's a number that is one that's not common in front of how long we were open, didn't mean that we couldn't keep going. So we like to look at it as a 30-year startup. We're brand new, but we've been around doing it well. So why not keep going? So the decision was easy, and it wasn't spoken. We didn't mull it over.
This wasn't like a long, ongoing, tortured kind of debate. It was like, okay, we got to find a new home. That's it.
Yeah, pretty much. Right. And, you know, Danny definitely led that charge, and we were all hoping that's where everyone was thinking.
Right, so. And so perhaps the hardest part was being able to keep it in the same neighborhood or relocate to the same neighborhood.
Absolutely. Like I said, we looked for at a lot of different places, and there's something very alive about an old restaurant that, you know, a long-standing restaurant. Don't use that word because none of us feel old, but
right.
there's just a soul and a vibrancy in the walls. And when you walk into another space and try to imagine that happening or starting that again, you become very opinionated about where you want to be and how it feels. And we were really lucky to find this space, and it feels great.
Had you been a patron of the prior restaurant, the soon to be new Union Square?
You know, I had eaten there before. I actually staged there when I was a young cook.
Yeah, I was going to share a story with you, too. I worked in that building.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's so you know the kitchen.
A little bit, yeah. I'm sure you're going to do lots of different things with it.
Yeah, definitely. You know, make the walk-in doors higher so we don't hit our foreheads on the way in and stuff. But I staged in the kitchen in 94 on my way to Europe. And
that's, so was that Villa Lulu days? Or was that Cafe Iguana days? Or... who knows?
No, who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah. But I kind of grew up in out west, so was not a patron, and but knew of the restaurant. That's why I worked, you know, scheduled a stage. And
so sure. Let's talk about your background for a little bit. You grew up where exactly?
In the Binghamton area, Endicott, New York.
Okay.
Yep.
And started cooking how?
I needed a part-time job one year, you know, and I think I was 16.
Uh-huh.
Went into a catering place called Banquet Masters across the street from my high school, and was a dishwasher, which I think is something that everyone should start out doing.
Well, and probably I would say a majority of people who do what you do probably do start.
Yeah,
with
I think
a dishwasher.
Less and less now, young cooks that are coming up, and but there's no shame in that, and it's just great to know every part of the restaurant.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
it's a little bit more of. The business perhaps might used to be a little bit more blue collar, and now there's a lot more aspirations from the young people.
Right, and I think how people love food and love to eat out, that naturally was going to happen, that to become a cook is a much more accepted professional step in an 18-year-old's life.
And for me, being a dishwasher was great because I ate for free, and I ate the good stuff. Like, I'll take that job.
Yeah, that's can't forget that, definitely. Nothing wrong with a little family meal. But so I was, I guess... pretty quick and athletic, and didn't know that was not a good athlete, though. I'll just say that. But the chef just waved me into the kitchen, and that was pretty much it. Not to go into anything too long, but he was the one who helped me go to the CIA. He was a grad himself, and I just went up to him one day and said, how do I do this for a living? And he got me there. So.
Right. And then you went out to, you spent time in California. You were at Trois-Vignettes?
Yes. That was my formative years, and flavor profiles, and I think I'm always drawn to restaurants that have, you know, the term big flavor, or there's contrast or conflict in Southern Italian flavors, or, you know, even how we cook today. It doesn't have to be Italian, but just something really damn yummy about that restaurant that I enjoyed, and have always found myself continuing to cook that way.
Right. And then you worked also for Lydia.
Yeah. I came back to New York, and... decided to take a step after being a chef and a partner at Trevina to line cook again.
Uh-huh.
And that was amazing. It was an amazing experience. You know, working in Napa for all those years was about as close as you can get to cooking in the Italian countryside without going there. And then at Flidia, that was as close as you could get to, like, cooking at the stoves of an Italian chef with that sense. And maybe a lighter touch with things than I'd seen in California, and really... broaden my horizons and perspective on food.
It was really striking looking at your, you know, bio before we were getting ready to do the show. Like, you, in a lot of ways, you seem like the perfect person, you know, at least on paper, to come in and take over the kitchen at Union Square Cafe. I mean, if you go back to the roots of the restaurant, you know, Danny was very influenced by California, made at least one really formative trip out there, I know, when he was pondering the restaurant, had spent time in Italy. So those influences that kind of formed you as a chef, it seems to me to be part of the DNA of that restaurant. Is that part of what led you there? What attracted them to you? How exactly did you come to the job?
That's a great question. I just basically sent my resumes out to places in New York, and they called me, and I had no idea they were thinking of me as a chef at Union Square Cafe. And those interviews basically ended up with me cooking for them. And they needed a chef de cuisine at the time. The company was getting ready to grow. I think it was the couple months after the Modern opened.
So you had just sent it kind of generically to generically, the Square Hospitality Group or whatever it was called at that time?
Yeah, and many other restaurateurs in New York. And I think they saw by what I had done that the fit would be right, hopefully. I guess I never really asked anyone, but you're spot on. You know, Union Square Cafe has always been that the sensibility of Northern California,
totally,
with a Tuscan soul or Italian soul, and kind of like the fun, raucous French bistro type of feeling. Also, like a third is what we like to point out to people.
Oh, is that how you guys talk about it?
Yeah,
I never heard that.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
So French bistro, Italian trattoria, and the sensibility of Northern California. You know, garden to table.
Yeah,
you nailed it.
So you fit it to a T.
Yeah, pretty much.
So
don't speak French, but you know, right, we're working on that.
What was it like coming? I mean, you come into a place like that. It's already got about 20 years under its belt. You know, really well known. A lot of regulars. A lot of people who've been ordering some of the same stuff. You know, at lunch. A lot of
big reviews to fill the shoes of.
Yeah. What was it like coming into that situation as the new chef?
You know, it was, I didn't know what to expect. I think it seemed simple, but it wasn't, because it's such an established culture that it took time to learn about the people and the regulars. And someone gave me great advice to, you know, slow down and look at all the things that are great before you think that you need to make some changes, or you know, find out what's great about the place and then pinpoint where you see evolving the food and things like that. So I was definitely very patient for the first year or two. Yeah. That doesn't mean I wasn't changing things on the menu. You know, seasonality is something that, you know, I've always cooked that way. So it was easy to work with the market. And
sure,
you know, that was part of my job then. But as far as how the menu started to feel different, and I definitely took some time to wrap my brain around it.
Did the process evolve through specials and everybody getting to know your food that way? Or was it just, let's pick a day and let's make some changes?
No, it was definitely, I never look at menu changes as something that happens on the 21st of each season.
Right.
You know, when's spring? March 21st.
No, you're right. Yeah. The 21st season.
It's always... to me, every 10 or 12 days in the Union Square Green Market, you can walk through there and say, okay, it's a little different. And that's how things influence me in the kitchen. So it happened through specials. And sometimes those specials were, all chefs take a step back and say, that's a menu item. That's something that people should eat over and over again.
Before you accepted the job, you know, I kind of liken that to, you know, somebody joining a maid badass rock and roll band, you know, hey, come join our band.
Right.
Like, I love you guys. I am so flattered. I am so honored. I wonder if I should do this, you know?
Yeah.
Was there that in your head, or was it just like, absolutely, let's do this?
I jumped in. I don't stop and analyze things much.
Sure.
And then I always feel like whatever challenges or hurdles come my way, I'll sort them out once I'm into something. But there's always going to be tough things and guests to win over, and you know, you can change a dish and let's say, well, that other dish was on for and I loved it, and I said, you know, and there's a lot of people in our dining room that helped out with that.
Sure. shortage of opinions.
A lot of my colleagues in the front of the house, you know, they would be a great conduit to those guests that
sure.
might not see it and get it and say, well, you know, just try out what he's doing here, and we did a lot of great things.
Very cool.
So, you know, we said, you know, 30 years is a good run. 10 years at most places is a great run. You've been there about that, I guess, a little longer than that.
Yep, a little longer.
Just for you, obviously you knew the restaurant was going to live on in this new place, right? It was going to be reconstituted or reincarnated or whatever you want to call it, or moved.
Right.
But what was, you know, over 10 years you can get attached to a space, you go there almost every day. Mm-hmm. What was that period of time last fall and leading into mid-December and that last service? What was that like? You know, put aside the history of the restaurant and the fact that it's part of this very successful company and its association with, you know, Danny and previous. What for you was the emotion of getting ready to move on from that space like?
I think one word, it would be exhilarating.
Exhilarating?
Yeah. And that doesn't mean I didn't have an attachment. You know, I often say to people, you know, I'm going to miss 16th Street. Just the neighbors and Bread's Bakery across the street and just that feeling.
Turning that corner in the morning.
Yeah, and, definitely. Yeah. It's funny. Union Square is a unique place on the other side. As you look up Park Ave, it feels like uptown. And on our side, it feels like downtown. And just the view that you have every day. But nothing else. There's nostalgia and melancholy and things like that. But I was always really excited to look forward to what we could do. Because everybody was all in from Danny on down. And the last couple nights was, I didn't know what to expect, but it was exhilarating and sad that we were all going to disband and cooks and sous chefs ending up in, working in other restaurants throughout the winter. And
right.
I did some traveling and then just getting to work on, you know, building this next place. But I loved the whole process. I'd never been through anything like it.
It's funny, you mentioned exhilarating, which surprised me, but I guess it really does make sense because the challenge, I think, that any restaurant of that age, and you said you don't like to use the word old, but any restaurant that's been, forget 30 years. I mean, even 10, 15. Right. I mean, Jimmy, you go through this with the Red Cat at 17 years. It is a constant effort, and there are people, you know, I've been lucky to spend a lot of time around Alfred Portale at the Gotham, mm-hmm. and, you know, they've gone through a couple of just wholesale reimaginings of the space. They've had people curating the art on the walls. They've changed the bar back. There's certain things they do that are very subtle that people don't even really notice because they want to keep the essential character. It is kind of an ongoing. They've changed their logo, I think, 3 times.
Right.
I mean, it is an ongoing thing, which I could easily see now that you say it. It seems so obvious in hindsight mm-hmm. that moving the place to a new space would be this real shot of adrenaline and creative energy.
Yeah, definitely.
New beginnings.
Absolutely. And we hear on the street over and over again that people can't wait till we come back. So that keeps us a lot of adrenaline going.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you get to buy new food every day and you get to hire new staff every day, but you do go to the same place and put the same key in the same door for 10 straight years.
Yeah.
You know, or more for some people, less for other people. But, you know, the neat thing about moving it is also the scary thing about moving it, you know, the new beginnings part.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just think that's the coolest thing that you're able to stay in that neighborhood because that really, you know, is definitive for that restaurant should be in that neighborhood.
Absolutely.
So we want to drill down into what the last, you know, 8 months have been like. But can we just talk a little about that actual, because there was so much coverage around the last night, couple of nights of service there. What was that like? Was there anything that surprised you about it? It seemed like it was a real homecoming for in a certain way, and a reunion for some people. And
sure,
what was that period of time like from where you stood?
Well, on one hand, they were very busy services, and
were they the busiest you'd seen in a while?
Yeah, we just tried to accommodate as many people as we could.
Yeah,
so it was operationally the same. It was busy, a lot of cooks. And then on the other hand, you knew that in a few days it was going to stop and we were going to have a little party and then I was going to move on and wrap up a few things with Union Square Events. I was doing something with them and then we were just going to travel and start going. So you were making plans to do things that had nothing to do with coming in and cooking. So
yeah.
It was it was a surreal balancing act of planning those things.
Plus there was just an amazing amount of love in that room. Like I showed up to have a drink with Waxman, you know, just say hi, see what's going on.
I remember when you guys were at the bar.
Just like, holy cow.
There's
like
a ton of people.
I have goosebumps right now from the thoughts of, you know, I was only there one of the nights, but it's really amazing how the people came out.
Yeah.
And
that was definitely gonna be the next thing I said, just the amount of love and people coming back into the kitchen and regulars who my cooks had never seen their faces before. And that's always a special moment when you see a cook put a face to something that's always been a ticket.
A name on
a ticket. And to watch the look in their eyes and the hospitality that just inherently is in them, how they reacted and shook this person's hand. And that was really special.
That's really special. Pardon me.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about what the last 8 or so months of getting the new Union Square Cafe ready to go are when we come back with Chef Carmen Quaglietta and Jimmy and Andrew at The Front Burner with Jimmy and Andrew. See you back here in 2 minutes.
Front Burner with Jimmy and Andrew is proudly sponsored by Restaurant Owner App. Restaurant Owner App is a free app designed by a restaurateur for restaurateurs. Restaurant Owner App empowers you to organize your restaurant from the palm of your hand on any iPhone or Android device. Place orders, track orders, and customize supply lists to track the organization of your kitchen or storeroom. Accomplish electronically what you've been doing by hand for years. Restaurant Owner App also allows you to see orders placed by your employees, so you're always in the know. Create a personalized vendor database and review past orders at any time. It also features promotions and specials on goods and services for the hospitality trade. Visit restaurantownerapp.com for more information, or to download for free and start organizing your restaurant today, search for Restaurant Owner App in the Apple App Store or in Google Play for Android phones.
Welcome back to The Front Burner with Jimmy and Andrew. We've been speaking with Chef Carmen Quaglietta of Union Square Cafe. And as most of you know, the restaurant is relocating from 16th Street, where it had it served its last meal in December 15. And we haven't even said this, Carmen. You guys are moving, what, in the fall?
Yes, October.
October will be the relaunch. Yes. Okay, and that's going to be on 16th Street in the former home of City Crab. Yes.
19th Street.
Excuse me, 19th Street. So you guys closed, did your last service in mid-December, and you've been working toward this new opening of the new Union Square Cafe. We want to kind of dial into what that process has been like and what the last 8 months have been like. If we just throw it out and say, you know, last 8 months, what's the first thing that comes to mind for you? What is just the highlights, if you don't think about it too much?
Yeah, it's broken into two sections. In the first 4 months was a lot of travel and events, and so that was great. I think a week after we closed, I was on a plane to Italy with my family, my two boys and my wife, and we just decompressed there and didn't do any of the...
Where in Italy, Joe?
We went to Assisi and Abruzzi. And a little bit of Rome.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's great. So I've always wanted to go to Umbria. Got to go on a truffle hunt with my kids. And
very good. Oh, great. How old are your kids?
15 and 17.
Oh, so old enough to
go
really enjoy that and get it.
It was great.
That's great.
And have family in Abruzzi, and I'd never been before, so that was stunning. And just, I think the people and the feel of Italy always impacts you in a way that comes out in so many different ways. If you're a writer or a musician, in my case, food.
Yeah.
Just don't really have to go and eat in fancy restaurants or anything. No. Just
soak it up.
Yeah.
A lot of creative juices flowing.
Yeah.
Great. So you were there for how long?
Did that for a couple of weeks and then came back and started planning trips with the team. And, my partner Sam in the front of the house and Danny and a few other people, we went to Europe for maybe 10 or 12 days. Wow. Paris first and then Italy. And that was an amazing time to just get away and take a look at, you know, what Union Square Cafe has meant to us over these last few years and what we want to do going forward and kind of reestablishing our roots in that country.
So you all are traveling together, eating, drinking, and all the while talking about where the restaurant's headed.
Yeah, and a lot of different things. Most of it not nitty-gritty operational stuff, but just, high-level things and as specific as, okay, what do we want to bring with us? What dishes or what things did we do really well outside of just treating our guests great and cooking great food? And we revisited a lot of things like that. So, and then also deciding what does change mean and ambition. And it doesn't mean that you're going to come into Union Square Cafe in October and feel like it's a totally different restaurant. The food should make you feel like it did before. You know, but we
But you know, sort of the, I mean, is the idea that it's almost going to be like, but the 2.0 version? I mean, do you talk in those kind of terms?
Yeah,
like
2.0
it's,
version. And
so there's a continuum from the original.
Right.
But some kind of step forward.
Yeah. Like we have our own bakery. So we're going to bake our own bread in-house to bring to the table. At the beginning of a meal at USC is always... that first act of hospitality or flavor that you get. Now to do it on that level with bread that we're going to be able to bake in house is really exciting.
That's great.
And just from the things that I learned in my travels made me think about dishes different ways. And I also, I think a lot about, well, you know, why doesn't anyone eat lamb shank anymore? I love lamb shank. And right. So what do I have to say? What can I bring to the dialogue about that cut of meat and finding the best lamb? And, you know, so there's a lot of, I mean, Jimmy, you know, that process is an ongoing one.
Always.
You know, you're just always thinking about things, and it's usually not the next miracle on a plate, but it does make someone sit back and say, oh, okay, let's see what they're doing here now. You know, right. So,
plus, you know what we do, we're not always inventing things, you know, but we are certainly repurposing them and bringing them out in different ways. Maybe it's more expressive of what we do. Maybe it's just what we want to do for our guests, but there's a lot of fun in that kind of stuff.
Yeah, too. Definitely. And so actually back to what we were doing for the last 8 months, I did get to do a collaboration dinner in Tokyo at Union Square Tokyo.
A lot of people may not know this, but there is a Union Square Cafe in Tokyo.
Yes, it's not Union Square Cafe, just Union Square Tokyo.
Oh, just Union Square Tokyo. Okay.
Very specific, but it's a licensing agreement with the company there that definitely has the same values in hospitality, and they're a great partner to have. And we are different businesses, but share a lot of the same philosophies. And we go there and travel and cook with them and their team. Hopefully next year we'll get to come to Union Square Cafe and continue that relationship. So,
had you been there much over the last decade?
I actually opened with Michael Romano. Was there for a week.
Great.
Went through the opening, and that was exciting. And love Japan. And I actually am influenced by the food there. And
sure.
How there's so much less reduction and searing and all those classical ways that we generate flavor in our kitchens. There's a different approach.
And they cut it up beforehand. You know, we're the only people who put the knives and forks on the table with the big giant steak.
Right. although they love steak.
Sure. How about the recipes? Are there, you know, pretty similar recipes in Tokyo versus, you know, the original? Or is it a full departure?
No, there's definitely similarities. Yeah. I think things that became... classics at Union Square Cafe were definitely repurposed.
Tuna filet mignon, tuna burger.
No, not at all.
My favorite, I mean, you know, I was young and I was reading about it and I was like, I got to go check this out, was the mashed turnips with the fried shallots on top. I was like, wow, anybody who does that is wicked cool. I got to see that. Yeah. I didn't live in New York then, you know. I was
right. Meyer family recipe.
That's what the press said, but you know.
Yeah. what about your team? Obviously, Union Square Hospitality Group's a big company. Were you able, by virtue of there being other restaurants, to hold on to a fair number of your people, or do you have people who maybe went to other jobs who are coming back? How much of your team, as much as you're able to say, sitting here in August? Are you going to be able to kind of reassemble in this new home, and how much do you think are going to be new cooks in the back of the house?
Yeah, I think that's one of the proudest things that we can say is that we found spots for over 30 of our kitchen employees.
Wow.
I lost track of the dining room statistics, but
sure.
it's for them to go into another kitchen and really
within the company, you mean?
Within the company,
strictly within,
and a few with outside
with friends,
and then still want to come back. Just says a lot to
that's amazing.
The fact that we still have a lot to show them and their realization of that, and so grateful to the restaurants that took them in and mentored them and taught them new things that they can come back to us with new knowledge. They have been outstanding in knowing that it was temporary and. That just speaks to how awesome USHG is.
Yeah. I mean, you can hear it in your voice. I can kind of sit in here, see it in your eyes a little. That seems like a real meaningful thing to you.
Definitely. And you know, we're almost, well, not quite staffed up with line cooks. But if you told me back in April that I'd be sitting here in August and I would be feeling pretty confident that we're going to be able to write the schedule.
Right.
I'd say you're crazy, but because it's tough, Jimmy.
No, I know. It's a feeling like no other. I tell you the Harrison story, you know, signed the lease before 9/11. Our opening date was September 17th. Obviously didn't get anywhere near that, but we had started orientation. I think we started orientation somewhere around September 6th or 8th. So we had hired 44 people and we had started orientation and then dead in the water. And then we made some phone calls, you know, maybe mid October to get open at the end of October. And out of the 44 people that we hired in, you know, August, who we did 1 or 2 days of orientation with, 42 of them showed up, you know, and that just blew me away. I was like, right. No way. 2.5, 3 months later, we're totally incommunicado. The lower Manhattan's a mess. You're going to come work with us here? Are you sure? Like, I know I have to, but you guys?
Yeah.
It's a feeling like no other.
Right.
You know?
What we were talking just before the show started, and you had mentioned that you know, for all the cooking you've done and all the big organizations and chefs you were involved with early in your career, you hadn't been through an opening before.
Right.
So this is basically an opening. I mean, you took over a space. You guys are designing it, I'm sure.
Sure.
I mean, I don't know. I assume there's going to be maybe some refreshment even you know, uniforms and logo and all this stuff.
We looked at everything.
What was the biggest, I know you probably can't give away too many specifics sitting here, so we won't put you on the spot for that. But just for you personally as a chef going through this process for the first time, just from a nuts and bolts point of view, what were kind of the big learning curves, big takeaways for you about what it means to go through an opening?
Well, first of all, you never have enough time.
No matter what.
No matter what. I'm grateful for the delays.
You always get to the home stretch and then you're like, oh my God.
I feel like, it's happening to me now. But we're staying ahead of it. You know, the thing that I've learned the most is as we start to test cook. And
you're in there now?
We're
trying out
now,
stuff?
Trying out stuff. And, you know, there's it's a surreal experience. You don't have your home that you had. And the pantry that you build, whether you're preserving or lemons or seasoning peppers you pickle from the market, and you have them through February and ramps and all these things that we build a palette for ourselves to cook with.
Yeah.
That's not there. And as you try to say, okay, well, what am I going to cook in the fall? Finding those ingredients and then saying, well, okay, we'll use frozen porcinis today for that dish, but you know, it's just, you know, you're going to have fresh in the fall. So it's tough to, set those flavor expectations up in a tasting, you know.
And what about just logistically or operationally getting used to a new kitchen or trying to sort of game out in your head how this new space is going to work when you're actually, you know, in service or when you do like your first friends and family, assuming you guys are going to do that.
Right.
What's it like getting your head around that for the first time?
That's fun. I love to look at kitchen plans. You know, I enjoyed the whole process of...
You have a high level of confidence around that.
I do. I think it's going to work really well. We're actually lucky enough that the space we were given, or not given, that the space we're renting, what is the kitchen, ended up sort of laying out almost like Union Square Cafe. Like,
oh, really?
How you enter, where the expediter is, where the line cooks are, the garmager is behind you, and it just happened.
So that was just a serendipitous
event. Even try to make that happen. So I think... You know, it's like watching a cook, or when you've cooked yourself, you go to a new station and the salt is over here, not there, and you're just getting used to that 1 or 2 frustrating days. Imagine doing that to a whole team in a whole new space, and just the fact that the basic geography is the same, I've always thought is going to turn out to be a big plus for us.
And who's there with you right now? I mean, as you're getting ready, you see you're testing dishes. I mean, is it you are testing dishes? You have
myself and my chef de cuisine, Amanda Wilson, who's been with me for 4 years.
Yeah.
Amazing talent, great person. She's in the kitchen right now, probably going to be heading back to Manhattan after this and starting in for tomorrow's tasting. And my purchasing manager, Liz McConnell, joined us today also. So that's going to be a big help just as we invoice ourselves from ingredients we're borrowing from Marta, which is the kitchen that we're cooking in.
How about the pastry department?
Pastry department is going to be Daniel Alvarez, who's a pastry sous chef from Gramercy Tavern. Daniel just recently joined the team.
Very cool.
He starts in late August. He'll start his work.
Right.
Yeah. So as people come on board and as we get closer to the opening, I'm hoping we're going to have a lot of the savory dishes kind of generally on the right track, and I'll back up and start to connect everybody. And there's a lot of time on email communicating and connecting people and just getting the ingredients for a tasting.
Right.
It's not like when you have your own kitchen and you're 50 yards from the Green Market.
Sure.
Actually, I think USC's front door is less than 50 yards from the Green Market. Right. So,
do you have a dish that you're really high on right now for a new one?
Yeah, I think we've got a few.
Yeah?
Yeah,
no
definitely.
Doubt. Enough said, right?
Yeah, right. I don't want to let that out easy. But it's really exciting because as I collaborate with my team, I love to hear their input. I have a certain style and things I like to do with certain ingredients. And when someone says something that is like an aha moment for me, because sounds really great. And
sure.
Hey, let's cook it. So we've always been that type of team. We get in there and try things together, and what will come out will definitely be different.
How is this? It's funny. We've had in the past, we've had discussions about this topic, and we've had people in who have been in here. Actually, probably the most dramatic one was we had Peter Hoffman in here, you know, the week that he shut back 40 West, and I've never seen a happier, more relaxed chef.
Him and Harold Dieterle, right?
And Harold Dieterle, too, who was in here pink-cheeked and, you know, well-rested. Carmen, you and I have never met before. You know Jimmy a little bit, but, you know, you do look very, like you're sleeping and you look healthy and relaxed and...
enjoying your summer.
You don't have like this sort of underlay of stress that often, you know, one tends to see in people in your line of work. How has it been not, obviously you've been working and we get that,
sure.
but you're not working the way you're working when you have a restaurant that goes through the daily cycle of a large, very successful New York City restaurant.
Right.
What's that period of time been like for you? Do you enjoy, have you enjoyed having a break from that? That kind of regiment, does it make you a little antsy? How has it been for you?
Well, you said it. You know, I've definitely enjoyed it, and I get antsy, I get anxious. I think most people just love to check things off their list, and that's sort of like stress relief. Okay, I got to that, and I got to that. When the season's coming, and you know tomatoes are going to hit the market, you're thinking about what am I going to do with those, and it's just this cadence of how you think and how you're. Life goes through these seasons of cooking, and I've missed that, but I've also enjoyed, for instance, being able to I decided one day to take a personal day. You know, and I didn't even know what I was supposed to do. Do I tell someone in HR I'm not coming in today?
Right.
And I worked on my garden, and my garden kicks ass this year. It's just
nice. That's great.
And it's because I actually did something that was a hobby that I liked, and I think that is why you see some relaxation and happiness in my face. And but knowing that you are going to open again someday and that it's going to be a big deal, you want to get to it.
You're still putting the pressure on yourself.
Yeah, you want to get to those things that are going to make it run smoothly. And it's way more than just test cooking these dishes.
And what about day to day of evening? Has it been weird at night for you?
I feel guilty when I'm going home at 8.
Right.
And other people at the office, and you know, we're a really great, hardworking group of people in our company. And there's a lot of people working late, and people start wrapping up, and I'm like, wow, mom, my colleagues are going to, you know, they're only halfway through dinner service right now. And there's just this guilt as a chef if you're
knowing it's coming back. Interesting.
It's programmed in you. You do something for long enough.
Yeah.
You know, the other side of it is, you know, with the jobs like we have where oftentimes we're not around when people want us to be around, you know, at night, during the holidays, blah, 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 you know, birthdays, whatever it is. I find that whenever I'm in an in-between moment, I'm being asked to do the million things that I've conveniently been able to say, no, I can't do.
Right. Yeah.
So there's another side of it.
Yeah.
So again, just from a, you know, again, from a nuts and bolts kind of procedural standpoint. Mm-hmm. You know, October sounds like a long way away. It's hot and muggy outside as we're sitting here.
No.
It's not that far away.
No, it's not that far away.
What's if there was like a time-lapse, time-lapse photography sequence, right, of the next 6 or 8 weeks, like what are the big steps between now and reopening? Like what are the big strides that happen?
I think here in August, it's a lot of test cooking and meetings. So a lot of running around the city and back and forth and going to the market and back to the kitchen.
Do they have a due date for you for delivering your kitchen?
We do, but we're just trying not to say a date. That's right. Why October is safe for us. Because
just thinking for you, it's easier to be working in your kitchen than running around.
Yeah, but you know, I think the way I have, again, I've never done this. It's just crazy. There will be a date that we can get in and start unpacking small wares and put up metro shelving. And then the next day, I guess, would be, and I no one told me, I just did this on myself on a calendar the other day. I took a big white piece of paper and drew, you know, a month's bunch worth of squares and said, okay, we'll do small wares the next day. We'll maybe get in beverage and disposables and janitorial supplies that day. And then we'll take in dry goods and then we'll take in perishables on Thursday. And if we can test cook before for a couple of days before friends and family, that, and so I just pretty much made it up myself.
And
has anyone who's done this, and anyone who's done it before looked at it and said, aced it?
You know, they said, that's kind of how it goes.
Yeah,
I couldn't imagine it being any other way.
Well,
right?
Then the other side is the restaurant business. However well laid plans you have, they will be changed.
Right.
You know,
so. I think you can do all that right up to where you're getting imperishables.
Sure.
And so if that day you know that, okay, well, you're really not going to get guests until a few days later, then you can stop there and everything's fine.
Right.
You know, we're paying rent. It's our place. So.
Right.
I think the gas is the key.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've
that's
had miserable experiences with that. Yeah, it'll be Thursday, August 30th, and it gets turned on October 15th,
right.
You know.
So. Right. So, Andrew, to answer your question, I guess to finish answering it, is the time-lapse thing would look like just test cooking, and then I think around Labor Day, those 2 weeks, it'll just be myself and my chef Amanda just really fine-tuning and honing in on things and getting recipes written and costing things out so we can then come up with menu prices. And then when everyone's back from Labor Day, we'll do we'll start layering in sous chefs.
Mm-hmm.
It's so tight once we get into the space. There's not 2 weeks of training without paying guests. That's just not going to happen. And I think we're athletic enough that we don't need to do that. So,
right.
Although I may eat my words there, but wish we had 2 weeks. But
it is this weird hybrid between an existing team largely and all that, and but also a new space.
Right. So through September at Marta, we'll be taking teams of sous chefs, and they will captain the station. And we'll go through those dishes with them, so they'll see them for the first time. Hopefully, we'll be able to have a meeting with a sort of a chef de partie line cook from each station that will meet with myself and those sous chefs, and they'll go through it and they'll get recipes. And you know, Jimmy, you know, when you're cooking in a kitchen in a restaurant that's up and running and moving and going through the seasons, you're not really typing that many recipes up and doing those things.
Very different.
And so, what I love about that is you can work with people and teach them how to work with these dishes and these techniques intuitively, and that's a great learning tool.
Sure.
But in this case, if they can read through it and talk about it with us, that maybe just sets some, and some people are think differently than me.
Absolutely.
They're not as as right-brained, maybe, you know. They are much more analytical, and it really helps some cooks to have a recipe, although they'll hear from us when we're working with them in the kitchen that, hey, you're not a robot. Things are going to change. Cooks, they'll figure it out.
Sure, absolutely.
So.
I want to touch a little bit on the old to the new. So, like, for instance, you had this, you know, great kitchen. It's been around forever. There are little things in that kitchen that you brought with you that you're excited about. You know, like you got your favorite pan or your favorite pot or, you know, this or that that'll come with you. Or is it just fresh?
No, you know, we finally bought a new Hobart mixer towards the end of our run.
Right.
We're bringing that. No, it's
no, but like, no, but when that's, I closed the Harrison, I literally saved 4 pots.
Yeah, there's definitely those
things.
There's definitely those things that we actually put into storage and are bringing back. We were thinking economically at the same time.
Sure.
We have a lot of small wares that we didn't have to buy.
Right.
But on a funny note, there is a little, you know, when you go to a ball game and you get ice cream in the helmet?
Yes.
There's a little Yankee plastic helmet that we would wrap someone's watch, an old school watch, around a towel,
put
that
helmet
for the expediting station. And the night that we ended, I did 2 things. I expedited the last service, and everybody was there. There was just sous chefs on every station.
Sure.
It was busy to the end, and I did 2 things. I grabbed the last ticket that was of the food that was sent out.
Oh, that's great.
I still have it, and I have that little helmet.
That's
great.
With a fresh towel and the watch ready to go for expediting.
So I was thinking the clock on the wall. You know, like I've been looking at that clock for X amount of years. I want to take it.
Yeah.
How about the dining room? Will there be anything from the past space that migrates over, or similarities, like hiring a muralist to do things like that?
We, you know, first of all, the David Rockwell Group did such an amazing job collaborating with Danny and bringing the soul of the restaurant in the sense of decor over to 19th Street. And there's definitely some, there's a few things, pieces of our old bar, or maybe a lamp or a pendant that might show up, or some artwork. You know, if you've seen the murals in the back of our dining room,
sure.
Those pieces might make their way over. And so I'm going to leave it kind of general like sure. that. So to Let's tease everyone to come in and check it out and visit us.
See if you can find right. what...
Right.
It's been carried over.
Exactly.
Yeah, it'll be like finding the Ninas in the old Hirschfeld cartoons. well, listen, we've come to the end of our show. Carmen, we wish you all the best.
Yes.
Can't
Thank you.
Wait
thanks, guys.
To check
Much
it out.
Luck and success.
And thanks for taking time out during, you know, this busy time to come visit us here.
My pleasure. Always fun.
This is our last show of the summer season, and we should mention that Jimmy and I both have things to tend to in the fall. We're actually going to take a short hiatus on the show. And I should say it's all good stuff. It's all good stuff.
Yes.
But stuff that's going to keep us from being able to be here as regularly as we would like. So we will not be with you weekly through the fall. However, if there is a big news story or a trend or something that we feel like we want to put on our capes and get some guests in and talk about, we will probably do a couple of special editions.
Yes.
Which, if you subscribe to the show, which you can do on iTunes and Stitcher, those shows, since we won't have a time slot, will go directly into our feed. So this isn't actually a sneaky way of trying to get people to subscribe, but it will be the only way you'll hear those episodes or be aware of them, unless you follow us on Twitter at Chef Podcast or on our Facebook account, The Front Burner with Jimmy and Andrew. We'd like to give a huge thank you to our producer, David, or our engineer, David. Sorry. David, thank you for a great season. Thanks for everything.
Thank
giving
you.
Me a little salute from the booth. And again, thanks to our guest today, Chef Carmen Quagliata. Thank you for coming in. All the best this fall.
You're welcome.
And we'd also, of course, love to give a huge thank you to our sponsor, Restaurant Owner App. Restaurant Owner App has been our first sponsor, joined us for this season. And we really appreciate the support. Please visit them and check out their website and download their app. Thank you. And with that, I'm Andrew Friedman.
I'm Jimmy Bradley.
And we'll see you back here soon on The Front Burner with Jimmy and Andrew.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.